Member-supported Jazz 90.1 proudly welcomes you to America's longest-running computer show, Soundbites. Call the show now at 966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll-free 800-790-0415 or soundbites.org. Now, alongside Steve Ray and Dave Enright, here's Nick Francesco on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Good afternoon, Mr. and Mrs. America, all the chips of the PC. It is Saturday, the 31st of August, Anno Domini 2013. And you, oh, you lucky people, you're listening to Soundbites. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And we're going to be bringing you news, views, things to choose, nothing to lose. Kick off your shoes. Don't get the blues. Did you pay your dues? Because today is National Bacon Day.
Oh, bacon. Yeah,
somebody was talking about chocolate and bacon.
How is that a problem?
Two great things.
Oh, no. My arteries are hurting just talking about it. Bacon and chocolate?
No.
Well, I would reserve them for two different
meals.
Well,
but no, they're talking about
bacon, then have chocolate for dessert.
I forget what it was. Something wrapped in wrapped in bacon and then dipped in chocolate.
I'm willing to try anything once.
I saw an infomercial for a bacon basket. It looked like, you know, a cupcake tin but with smaller holes, and you line it in bacon and then fill it with whatever you want.
More bacon.
More bacon, yeah.
You too. My arteries are clogging up just talking to you.
One thing that's not wrong with me is my cholesterol.
I knew it.
They keep rechecking because they keep thinking, look at me. How can my cholesterol not? I have great cholesterol.
Oh, bite me.
Thank you very much.
Mine changed by changing my eating habits.
Right, right.
I was able to greatly reduce that, so, yeah.
All right, our first, you can give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299, toll-free 1-800-790-0415. In the meantime, I will give us the beginning of the news. Apple is beginning final preparations to launch an iPhone trade-in program in its retail stores by next month, according to sources with knowledge of the initiative. This trade-in program will allow customers that own earlier versions of the iPhone, such as the iPhone 4S, to bring the phone into an Apple store and exchange it for a new iPhone model like the iPhone 5 at a discounted price. On the allure of a trade-in program, Apple CEO Tim Cook said during the last earnings call that he is not opposed to such a strategy. I see channels doing it, and I like the environmental aspect of it, so that part of it really is encouraging to me, he said. Third-party iPhone sales channels like Best Buy, Verizon Wireless, AT&T have been pushing their own trade-in programs for several months. The iPhone trade-in program is designed as a critical component of Cook's blueprint to bolstering iPhone sales in his chain of stores. Cook explained to Apple retail leadership that he does not feel iPhone sales are healthy enough at Apple stores. 80% of iPhone sales are not sold directly from Apple retail, Cook told these. 80% are not sold through Apple retail. That's very interesting. Because people don't go to Apple for a phone, they go to Verizon or Sprint AT&T or whatever. That makes sense to me.
The major carriers.
Right. This new ability to exchange an iPhone and receive fresh new model at a discounted price, perhaps the iPhone trade-in program will help Cook's goal of selling more iPhones directly from his store. A critical aspect of this actually driving traffic to Apple stores so that new iPhone customers are exposed to the entire Apple ecosystem. When a customer visits an Apple store to purchase their new iPhone, they will be immediately made aware of other Apple devices like iPads and Macs. That's not to say the program will not be built for simplicity. The goal is for a customer to be able to walk in with an old phone and out with a new phone within minutes after they've been told all about Macs and iPads. With rumors of new iPhones gaining mainstream attention in recent months, perhaps it would behoove Apple to wait until after the new devices launch to provide the trade-in program. This could spur even more upgrades to the new products. On the other hand, beginning the trade-in program before the new iPhone's launch could boost iPhone 5 sales, a device Apple will likely want a clear inventory of if it will, in fact, be discounted come the end of September. So, a poll of the week at soundbites.org. That's Bites with a Y. Francis would like us to remind you, Apple's new trade-in program. The choices are, can't wait, could be interesting, meh, isn't Apple just cannibalizing its own sales? So far, we've got 27 votes, and meh is significantly in the lead. When you're done with that, I know you'll have more to say about this. So check out the forums. About halfway down the right-hand column, you'll see fascinating stuff. Under there is a link to the forums. So you select that, and you will see a bunch of forums. The second one is poll discussion. And the very first post in there is about today's poll, 31 August 13, Apple's new trade-in program. So far, it's just me and Christian, but that's a good start.
Did you guys hear that tone going off?
Yeah. I think that was...
No, you know what it is? Evidently, they've changed the phone system. That's to alert me.
Oh, instead of just the blinky light?
The blinky light.
Really, extraneous beeps in a radio station are a real good idea.
I was worried that I thought I was joining your Hangout. I might have been making a new one, and your computer was beeping that I was trying to create one.
Okay, maybe that's
Maybe that's what it was.
Because I was going to say, because the minute
You're
I picked
up... my Hangout.
Well, the point what I was trying to make is, the minute I picked up the phone, the beeping stopped. I thought, did they change something while I was gone last week?
I don't know.
Forgot to tell me?
Anyway, give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299, toll-free 1-800-790-0415.
But that's the whole thing, though. You know, the phones are just getting...
They're becoming commodities.
Yeah, and I mean, the iPhone, there's no big features. You know, the wild bang, you know, oh, I've got to have the latest and greatest...
Well, we don't know what the new features are going to be yet. That's part of the problem.
Yeah, but I'm saying on the current one. The current one.
Well, if you had an old iPhone, then the new one's got a bigger screen and everything bigger, better, depending.
So there's also the Galaxy.
Right. So it's sort of whatever platform you like, you're waiting for the next new phone. And Apple people are much more brand loyal. That if you have an iPhone 4, you're probably going to buy the 4S and then probably the 5. Where on the Android side, people buy the next whatever best Android there is. They don't care the manufacturer. They don't care the brand.
Yeah,
and this trade-in program is interesting because that's usually the carrier's fault. That you're locked into a two-year contract with your carrier, AT&T, you know, Verizon, and you cannot upgrade your phone without a huge penalty. So it's interesting now that Apple is starting to do that trade-in. And then switch your SIM to the new phone for no penalty because you're still in your contract. It's a little bit what T-Mobile has started doing. It's kind of iffy, but you don't have a contract to buy your iPhone, but you have to pay $20 a month for the iPhone.
Yeah, right.
On top of your $40, $50 a month.
Well, you pay $20 a month for the privilege of changing phones.
Right. So you have it's not a contract.
It's not just iPhones.
Yeah, they started it on all the phones, but it's the iPhone was their first big one they were marketing. So it's not a contract, but if you stop using that phone, you have to pay the rest off that.
Then what is it? Doesn't that constitute a contract?
No, you don't sign a contract. You sign a promissory note. You promise to pay them the cost of the phone they are subsidizing. The other way is a contract that you are required to pay.
You know what?
It's legal semantics, but for a lot of...
That's it. That's all in the wordplay.
Politely put.
Yeah.
Yes.
The one benefit that does happen is that at the end of the 2 years, if you're using T-Mobile, your phone bill will go down because you've paid off your phone.
Unless you
buy a new phone.
Yeah, so and then
Well, if you keep your phone, and a lot of people end up keeping their phone, so on the other carriers, when your contract ends and you keep your phone, your bill doesn't go down.
Right.
You paid off the subsidy for that phone, but they don't lower your bill.
Right.
So if you're the type of person that keeps the same phone for 3 or 4 years, then this T-Mobile deal could be better. Now, the other one is every 6 months now you can get a new phone.
Yeah.
If you keep paying for the next new phone.
Right.
No, the one I got right now, I can see me, like you, Nick, holding on to it for a while because my major complaint about any phone was always the battery life.
Yep.
And now I can go all day texting Kathy and, you know, talking to friends and whatever, whole day. And by the end of the day, I'm still 60% or more.
Yep.
You know, it just doesn't. It's a great battery life.
Yeah, Max X with the 48-hour battery.
We've decided to use our phones for everything. much more than phone calls, and quite frequently not phone calls.
The odd thing is, we were at the Verizon store last night. So her phone was having an issue, and believe it or not, here we're in a cell phone store. Guess what they were trying to push?
Tablets. What?
They got a great deal on landlines.
No. Well, yeah. Nobody's buying landlines.
$20 for a month, unlimited long-distance phone calls and everything else. They go, well, could I talk you into getting a home phone? No.
A couple.
I just got rid of mine.
I've got one. I carry it on my belt.
Yeah.
A couple of the national telephone companies have started petitioning the FCC to stop requiring landline service. They've already tried to stop issuing phone books, because very few people use phone books anymore, and to stop requiring them to provide phone service, because a lot of people are using cell phones. But it's still a big issue in rural areas. You can't get high-speed internet, you can't get cellular access, so you have to have that landline.
That's why Google has the Loon Project,
yep,
where they're going to float balloons in the air with actually wireless connectivity.
Seriously?
Oh, yeah. Oh, it's great. It's called the Loon Project, and it really kind of is loony. But you know what?
Yeah, I was going to say, what happens when...
No, it's balloon.
Well, it's called the Loon Project.
Yeah, no, but around
it's
here...
It's balloon project.
Yeah. But around here with the storms and everything else?
Well, I'm sure they're not thinking about it around here yet.
Yeah.
It's all those places in the Midwest where, as Steve says, they have no service.
True.
Yeah.
So,
100 miles between farmhouses.
Right.
If you can see your neighbor, they're too close.
My father-in-law had that attitude when he lived in Leroy.
Mm-hmm.
He was really kind of angry when you could look at the horizon and see somebody had built a house there. Okay.
Yep. All right, Dad.
I can reach out my window and touch my neighbor. Well, no, I can't, but you know what I mean.
Yeah.
All right, to the phones. Our first caller patiently waiting on the line, Dan from Hilton, New York. Welcome, Dan. What's up?
I had a question about a printer that I have.
Yeah.
I was wondering, it's an HP DeskJet F4-280 all-in-one.
Yeah.
And I'm looking for like a power cord for it. And I see that they don't like sell them in stores anymore because the printer's kind of old.
Yeah.
Often what you can do is, do you still have the old cord and it's broken?
No, like, I actually got it from, somebody that was throwing it out.
Okay.
The printer works still, but
the
power cord wasn't with it. But
probably ran out of, probably ran out of ink, and it's easier to buy a new printer.
It probably is cat or
you may
rabbit or something.
On the back of the printer, there is often a rating for the power requirements. It's 9-volt, half an amp plus, plus tip, something like that.
Yeah.
You can either write that down or you can take the printer with you to like Radio Shack, and quite often they sell universal power adapters, and you just have to get the right tip.
Really, because I was talking to some other places and they were telling me that there's like no they don't usually like sell a universal like power cord since HP like the like printer power cords are so specific.
Sometimes it is a proprietary cord, but sometimes it's just a little round power nub that you see on a lot of different devices. So it depends on what that specific one has. And you can try HP parts service.
Yeah, I called them, but they actually have the cord for it, and it's two parts, but they sell them separately, so it's like 25 and 25. It like cost me 50 for the whole cord, though.
Well, what do you want to do?
Okay, I know what it is then. It's that little two circle thingy. That half you can find real cheap.
Okay, here's the deal. If you go to Google and type in HP DeskJet F4280 power cord, you'll come up with a whole bunch of places that sell them. eBay has them, Raccoon.com, General Savings has them, PrinterCords.com, Amazon.
Oh, I see. Yeah.
Everybody's got them.
So it's the weird three-prong connector that HP uses. That's part of the problem.
I think it is a three-prong.
Yeah. And then it goes into the brick, and then on the other half of the brick is a two-prong connector, which is a pretty standard connection.
Yeah, I think there's two parts. There's the brick, and then there's the other one.
Yeah, I'm looking at them right now. If you go into Google and just type the name of your printer, HP DeskJet F4280 and power cord, you really will see Staples sells them. Everybody's got them.
Really, because I called Staples and they said they don't sell anything.
Well, yeah, you can't call them because they're not going to know. You know. Somebody answers the phone, they're not going to know everything they have in stock. And quite often,
That particular one right there is a paid ad, and it's actually for toner. But keep going down. AliExpress, Amazon, printercords.com.
It may not be physically in the store. You may have to order it online.
Walmart.
Yeah, I just found a bigger picture of it. And this the two... lost it again. The two-prong thingy is a pretty standard two-pronger. It's the three-prong that's the custom one.
All right, do that. We have to take a break. Back in just a couple of minutes. Dave Enright, Steve Ray, me, Nick Francesco, and you. It is 20 minutes after the hour. You are listening to the longest-running computer show in the known universe. Shockingly, that's Soundbites, right here on the truly great and truly member-supported Jazz 90.1. Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Henry.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And at 26 minutes after the hour, we are Soundbites. And we have Smiley from Cuckville on the line.
Is that your favorite spot, Nick?
My favorite wide spot on the road. It absolutely is. I have to go find my hat now. I have a hat that says...
You can't even buy the hat or shirt anymore.
You can't!
The store that sold them is closed. What I've been doing is I'm at the cottage right now. I'll be here until Monday, but I have been traveling from past Greens Harbor all the way Sackett Harbor since the end of June, visiting relatives and so forth at the cottages and that. And so that's one reason why I haven't been on the forum but keep sending me the what do you call it, you know, because that's the reason I'm not there.
I got it. There used to be a place in Cuckville where we went camping near there every time it rained, actually. And it's a separate story. And you could buy a hat.
Camping makes it rain.
Yes, you could buy a hat and a shirt and a holder for your soda, that said, where the hell is Cuckville?
Yeah, but you can't get them anymore, Nick.
I can't believe this.
So if you got one, save it.
It's right next to Lindenville.
Yeah. Well, we know that.
Yeah. Okay, guys, I'll let you go. That's all I don't know how long this phone's going to work, and I'm with my hard of hearing and so forth, man. So I want to tie the lines up. I just wanted to let you know, Nick, that I'm still alive, and I'm at your favorite spot because you didn't mention a couple of times and so forth.
Yep, I'm glad to hear from you, Smiley. You keep that smiling going on.
I didn't catch all of that.
You keep smiling, my friend.
Okay. See you, Nick. Thanks a lot.
Yep. Have fun.
It's almost sad to think, but we have been around long enough that sometimes some of our longstanding friends of the show have passed away.
Yeah, they have.
Yeah.
But Smiley's still around. Good to know. Hold on. Smiley is a heck of a guy. I've always liked Smiley.
He's got some more questions.
Oh, and our next caller. Or perhaps our first caller, it's deja vu all over again. Dan from Hilton has returned. What's up, Dan?
I just had some other questions.
Oh, sure. Go ahead.
About the printer there, because you guys that went to commercial, you must have not had a lot of time.
No, we didn't. We have hard breaks. We have to take them, so keep talking.
All right. I'm going to just make it quick then. The printer that I was talking about. I was wondering, did you know any other place besides Radio Shack that might have that older cord or where I could get something like that for a cheap price or anything?
What we said was you have to go to Google and type in what I told you to type in. You'll find 50 places that sell it at all kinds of prices.
At both halves of it.
I'm not going to do that work for you off to you.
I actually went online a while ago and put in a search for that, and I didn't really see much.
Use Google to do your search. That finds pretty much all the best.
Like I said, put exactly that. HP DeskJet F4280 power cord.
All right, and you know, like, is there any, like, other place, like, any Bay Store or, like, a Walmart or anything?
The problem is that the HP end of it, the three-pronger, is HP proprietary, and you're not going to find that at a regular store.
You're not going to do it. The only option you have is to go online.
Find it on Amazon.
All right.
The other half of that cord that plugs into the HP brick, that's a fairly common cord, and they'd have that at, like, Radio Shack. But it's the HP half of the cord that you're going to have to go online and get.
Right.
All right, so besides online, like, there's no other place?
No, there's just online.
There may be some stores in town that sell used computers and have used printers, but they'll probably want to sell you the whole printer and the cord with it.
So you don't think any shop would have anything like that?
Aren't magic. Yeah. You got to make the calls.
Yeah.
I'm sorry, but we don't know every tiny bit of inventory about everybody's stock.
And to be honest with you, most stores, I wouldn't want to carry that in my shop. What's the odds, you know, having that hanging around? You know, the only place it's going to have it is, like you say, online.
Right. And
that's the bottom line.
And most kids, speaking as a store owner too, most places you get a new printer for $50, including the cord.
Right.
For a low end inkjet printer. So it doesn't make much sense to carry those kind of parts. We hardly ever fix printers anymore anyway.
Yeah,
it's easier just to... Unfortunately, it's easier to throw it away and buy a new one.
They're a disposable commodity.
Yep.
If you know what the end looks like, you might want to go to someplace like Best Buy, because there's a company called Targus, T-A-R-G-U-S, who makes what they call a universal power adapter. And what it really means is they've got a brick and a connector, and then about 20 different ends that you can plug into that. So if you know what that end for the printer looks like, you can go look at those ends and see if one of them matches. But again, I have not memorized all the ends of all the models of the Targus.
And that's going to be hard because, like you say, HP has a proprietary connector into the power supply.
Yep, I'm sorry.
All right, so the only option I have is really for something like that is to go online.
That's it.
You got it.
All right, well, that's all I was really asking.
Okay, thanks.
Thank you.
Bye.
Bye.
Yeah, unfortunately, parts like that, companies don't want to stock anymore because there's so many models and so many parts it could be.
Yeah, that's one thing they have not gone across the board and said, you know, this is a universal. It's always different
for each company. Most companies use that little round tip for their laptops that you can often find at Radio Shack or this Targus adapter. Apple is using the MagSafe connector, so it doesn't break off as easy.
That's one that should have caught on to everybody.
Yeah,
that was a slick idea.
It's copyrighted by Apple, and you have to pay a royalty fee until that copyright runs out. Unless you can...
It's probably beyond our lifetime.
Probably not copyright, probably patent. So you have to work your way around that if you want to make something similar.
Right.
But... a lot of people have wanted car adapters and airplane adapters that fit that MagSafe. So Apple used to make an airplane adapter for the old MagSafe. Now we have MagSafe 2, which is thinner.
Yeah, nobody cares about Steve Jobs, the only person on Earth who cared about thinner, and we know why. But the point is that nobody else cares. It's just a way to obsolete all the old equipment.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. But people are angry. I mean, people that I talk to are angry. They've got hundreds and hundreds of dollars tied up in peripherals that they can't use anymore.
Right. Or you have to buy dozens of adapters.
And those adapters mean the thing sticks up too far, isn't held on tight, et cetera, et cetera.
It's not the same.
It's not the same.
Not the same.
Yep.
And they're kind of angry about that. But that is what it is. All right. Oh, I love this one. It looks like Samsung will beat Apple to market with a smartwatch by at least 9 months. Or perhaps even longer. A new report from Digitimes cites an analyst at Kuala Lumpur-based CIMB Group stating that Apple's iWatch will likely launch in the second half of 2014. Because we also don't know if it's going to really be called the iWatch.
Right, and we get all of our dedicated tech news from Kuala Lumpur.
All of it, every time. Actually, they're a lot closer to the people making it than we are.
It's usually Digitimes that
makes
these rumors.
And it is Digitimes that this came from, but they got it from somebody in Kuala Lumpur. In the meantime, Apple's Galaxy Gear has been confirmed for a September 4th unveiling.
Samsung.
What did I say?
Apple.
Did I?
Yeah.
I'm an idiot. I'm reading Samsung. It says Samsung right here on my piece of paper where I wrote it last night. Samsung's Galaxy Gear has been confirmed for a September 4th unveiling, and it is expected to be released sometime in October. The report states that Taiwan-based ODM Inventec is expected to land at least 60% of Apple smartwatch orders, and that is Apple, which could amount to 19% of the firm's total profit in 2014. The iWatch will launch with a price tag starting between $149 and $229.
How do they know?
According to the report, and the unnamed SAMB Group analyst expects 2014 shipments to reach a whopping 63.4 million units.
Well, even if they guess and it's high and it comes in lower, they win.
The unannounced product with unannounced specifications and unannounced features will cost $150.
Somewhere between $150 and $229. Well, they're doing the same analysis that Apple does to figure out how much will the market
bear. Yes. They throw it up to the wall and see if it sticks.
Right. Lee Young-hee, Executive Vice President of Samsung Mobile, says that the Galaxy Gear will be based on Android and feature a non-flexible display. Lee calls the Galaxy Gear a wearable concept device, which raises the question, will Samsung actually sell this smartwatch to the mass market? Lee adds that Samsung is confident that the Gear will add meaningful momentum to the mobile industry, implying the device is just an early exploration of a potential market rather than one aimed at mainstream adoption. In the same interview, Lee also confirmed that the Galaxy Note 3, a sequel to the popular tablet smartphone hybrid, the Galaxy Note 2, will make an appearance at the September 4th event at the annual IFA conference in Berlin. She later goes on to dismiss rumors that Samsung is preparing to buy the struggling Canadian manufacturer BlackBerry. Are you looking to buy a smartwatch? Give us a call. 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll free 1-800-790-0415. You know, I've been saying this for a while now. I only really need one device if I've got the right peripherals.
Right.
I would like to have my Nexus 7 able to make phone calls. I put it in my backpack.
Add Skype and you can.
Or
Magic Jack or Google Talk. Or,
right.
Yeah.
I put it in my backpack, never look at it again. If a phone call comes in, I can look at my watch and see who's calling. If I decide to answer it, I hit my Bluetooth earpiece and talk to them. If I want to dial somebody, do it right from my watch.
Isn't it called a cell phone and an earpiece?
It's a cell phone and earpiece, but it's big enough to use as my tablet as well. So it's also my e-reader and every other
The Galaxies are getting to be that.
See, that's what
I'm saying. If I could add a phone element to my Nexus 7, I'd be a happy man.
Sounds
well, that's the Nexus. What is it? The Note 2 is the 5-inch telephone.
The phablet.
The phablet, yeah. It's part phone, part tablet. But that's the Pebble Watch for iPhone and Android is a watch, and it will receive your text, it will receive your tweets, and so you don't have to take your phone out of your pocket.
Well, that's the whole point.
Right, and that's the big criticism on the net. It's such a first world problem
that
we don't want to have to take our phone out of our pocket to see who's calling.
Well, but if your phone were 7 inches big and it was in your backpack or your purse or whatever, you would want that. It becomes a part of the real device.
There have been people calling about an iPad mini or the iPad mini 8-inch screen. I'm going to post that link in a minute. To put a phone feature in it. So to go to like the 5-inch. Don't they have a 6-inch now? Note 3, isn't that even bigger now?
It's bigger. I don't know that it's 6 inches.
But it has an actual telephone in it, so it is a cell phone. But with any of the Android tablets or iOS tablets, you can get Google Talk or Skype or Magic Jack, and there's a lot of telephony programs to turn it into an actual telephone using data rather than cell phone minutes. But a lot of people want that one device that does let you have your tablet and your phone and not need to carry a bunch of stuff.
Yeah, it'll be larger than its 5.5-inch predecessor, which we don't know what that means. All right, we're going to take a quick break. We'll be back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, me, Nick Francesco, and you. It is 40 minutes after the hour. We continue to be the longest-running computer show in the known universe. We are Soundbites, member-supported, Jazz 90.1. Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And at 45 minutes after the hour, we are Soundbites. And you can give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll free, 1-800-790-0415. In the meantime, I know you've been all waiting for this. Yahoo! And now you owe them money. I don't know how
that's
much,
true, yeah.
But you owe them some money. Yahoo's begun notifying those who requested a particular user ID through the company's newly expanded pool of usernames if their choice has been granted. In case you missed it the first time around, earlier this summer, Yahoo announced it would reopen access to unused Yahoo IDs, the email addresses associated with them. The plans that were initially met with a bit of controversy surrounding the security practices of doing such a thing, but Yahoo quickly addressed those concerns through additional protections. Announced in mid-July, interested users could head over to wishlist.yahoo.com to request up to 5 email addresses. If the company determined those IDs eligible for reuse, they would then be awarded on a first-come, first-served basis. The move was meant to trigger a land rush for emails and user IDs, which have long since been taken, like your name, for example, without numbers attached to it. Although emailing from John Smith at Yahoo.com could also indicate that you've been with Yahoo since day one. Now, Yahoo is alerting users if they were able to snag their preferred user ID before others. If they didn't, then Yahoo says it is also announcing a new watch list, which users will be added to automatically for free. This feature will alert you if your preferred username ever becomes available at some point in the future. For those who never requested a new Yahoo ID, the company is making a fairly interesting step with the new watch list. You can now pay $1.99 to access the service, which tracks 5 names for 3 years. The watch list will hold names that become available for 14 days, allowing you a chance to stake your claim. I would think the Yahoo is misguided or incredibly optimistic. If it thinks that a Yahoo ID is something that's actually worth paying for at this point in time, then again, if you have some special plans for a name like Batman at Yahoo.com, which the company said was high on their list of requests, maybe you're willing to pay to stalk it. Are you actually hoping for a Yahoo address? Give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll free, 1-800-790-0415.
And how fast before the cyber squatters start doing registering that so that they can get fake names and they can steal your name as soon as it goes dormant? So we have a lot of people that signed up for Yahoo addresses when it came out and never got around to using them. And now that Yahoo has started buying so many other people, you want to go back, you get into your Flickr account. Oh, you already have a Yahoo address. I do.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, I created that 20 years for you.
Yeah, right. All right, our next caller is Mary from Rochester, New York. Welcome, Mary. What's up?
Hi. I wondered if you guys could help me pick out a new computer.
Sure. That one.
Yeah. I have a 2008 Dell Studio. Three gigs of RAM, and I don't know. But I know it's just too old, it's too slow, it doesn't do videos anymore. Most of what I do on the computer is, I read newspapers, I've subscribed to 5 or 6 newspapers, and I read them. I do a lot of research, I look at a video once in a while, Facebook.
Yeah, it's the video and the more intensive websites like Facebook that sort of kick up the notch. You want at least a dual core i5, if not quad core. You probably don't need to go to the expense of a quad core unless you're playing shooter games, things like that.
Yeah, I don't do any games at all.
Yeah, you want at least four gigs of main memory and dedicated
graphics video.
That's another big one too.
Mm-hmm.
Can you repeat that, please?
What it is basically you want a graphics card that has its own memory on board. So they call that dedicated graphics.
On the spec sheet will list either integrated graphics or discrete graphics. And you want discrete. Integrated means it uses part of your main memory. Right. That makes it cheaper, but it makes it a little slower.
Yep.
Okay.
And memory's so cheap nowadays.
Yes. Yes. Well, I'd also like to put, I've traveled extensively, and I'd like to put, I don't know, probably 3,000 photos someplace.
Yeah, that's nothing.
And then
the smallest hard drives you find these days are usually 300 gigs, 500 gigs.
Yeah.
That will let you put 500,000 photos.
Terabytes. Most of them are film photos. They've got to be scanned.
Are you looking desktop or laptop? Maybe that's
a laptop.
Yeah, laptops generally have a slightly smaller hard drive than desktops, but 500 is common. Terabyte drives are getting more common even in laptops.
Two things though, Mary. If you've got all these pictures that are very important to you, you really want to have them in at least two places.
Yes.
Yes. I have a small storage space. I was going to keep the originals and the negs there.
Oh, these are physical pictures.
Yeah.
From film camera. Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. Once you get them digitized in your computer, you generally and with digital pictures that you take digitally anyway, once you have them in your computer, you don't have negatives anymore. So you generally want to have a second hard drive or an online backup service to have a second copy of all your data. In fact, I got five computers in the shop this week for failed hard drives. Well, it's my only copy of the data. And two of them are backup drives. They said, my backup drive failed. So you'll have your stuff on your main drive.
Right.
No, I deleted it from my main drive.
That's not a backup!
That was very good in harmony.
So you want a second copy of all your stuff on another drive, and then take that drive, put it in your storage zone, too.
Okay, I do have, like, a terabyte of, I don't know what it's called. It's, like, the size of a large cell phone.
Oh, fine. That's a good thing to have. Here's the thing you need to do, Mary. Take a look at all the various places in town that sell these things. There are two things that are, well, are you planning on actually carrying this thing around with you a lot?
You know what? I would love to have a small one that I could travel with.
Okay, yeah, then
the lighter they are,
things,
the more expensive they are.
Right. There are three things that are important to you then. The keyboard.
Yeah.
The screen.
Yeah.
And the weight and size. So you need to actually look at these things physically. You can do that at many of the stores in town, particularly the big box stores, but also certainly the local vendors have good stuff. And so my suggestion is you go around and look at these, make yourself a checklist.
Yep.
Right? With the things we talked about today, but also anything else you might think you want to do with it. And take your time. It's like it's a lot like looking for a car. It's you know, beyond your house and your car, it's a pretty big purchase.
Yeah.
In people's lives. So do your homework, do your footwork, and you'll be much more likely to make a decision you'll be happy to live with.
Okay. Can I ask one more question?
Of course.
In addition to the photos, I've got like 300 CDs that I would like to put somewhere also so that I can access it and put it on an iPad.
Yep. Same thing. You can
that's a big thing. Yeah, a lot of laptops and many desktops don't come with a built-in CD drive anymore to save the weight. You can always get an external one. And so when you're at home, you plug in the external drive and rip your discs. But if you want to be able to read CDs on the road, then you want to have one that's built in to save that weight. Although most people don't need them on the road anymore.
Right, right. What most people do is they have an external drive now, CD or DVD or Blu-ray drive.
Okay.
That they can hook to their computer whenever they want to rip a CD or do, you know, movies or whatever. But then they can leave it behind. When, for example, you're going to the coffee shop.
Yeah, yeah. Gotcha.
Right. And then do the same thing with the CDs that you're doing with the photos, which is back them up onto that external box.
Okay.
So then you've really got three copies because you've got you still got the original CD. But the point behind that is you don't have to re-rip them.
Yeah.
That's okay. Just a time saver. Mm-hmm. And they're not going to take up that much space if it's a okay. decent sized drive.
Okay.
Okie right. doke.
That's very helpful. Thank you very much, guys.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
One of the annoyances and problems in looking at a new laptop is most of the PC companies will have different sections. Do you want value? Do you want performance?
Right.
I want both. Well, you can't get both.
Right.
So you can have it cheap, fast, good, pick two.
This week I've gotten an awful lot of questions about my Chromebook, which I tend to carry
mm-hmm.
almost everywhere except here. And I tell people it does everything I want to do. That doesn't mean it's going to do what you want it to do.
Yeah.
You know, you have to figure out what's most important to you. And I have my music on my iPod, and I've got my so everything else I do, I can do off of here without a problem.
Yeah.
And I've got my tablet, which I can put my music or my videos on as well. Yeah. All right. All right. We'll see if we can get to you. Joe from Rochester, New York. Listen, Joe, we may only be able to take your question and then get your answer after the break, but what's up?
Quick question, guys. I'm interested in buying an iPad, and I understand that they are going to be coming out with a new one this fall. Do I wait? I'm not in a hurry to buy this. Do I wait for the bigger or the better version to come out?
Yeah, if you're not in a hurry, there's no harm in waiting. And the one thing that will happen is the current models will drop in price when okay. new ones come out. So if you don't need the biggest, bestest, fastest one, then you can save some money on the current ones, which are currently the best one.
Right.
It's like every next model is the best one we've ever made.
Right, right. right. Okay, great. And quick question, can you run a printer off an iPad?
Sure, but it has to be a new enough printer to support the technology. Apple calls it AirPrint. Some other companies have different names for it.
Google calls it CloudPrint.
CloudPrint. HP calls it ePrint,
okay.
Which actually adds another feature where your printer gets an email address.
Right.
So anywhere you happen to be, you email your document, and it comes out the printer at home.
Okay.
But most new printers, and especially
who
wireless
prints
printers.
Anymore, Joe?
Yeah.
Yeah, well, pictures. I do like,
yes.
you know,
oh, yeah,
four
right.
by sixes,
yeah.
so.
And yeah. most printer manufacturers have their own apps, so that even if your printer isn't a new AirPrint compatible one, you can get the HP app or the Canon app and print to your existing wireless printer.
Okay. All right, that answers my question. I think I'll wait. When do you see them coming out with a new iPad.
The rumors are fall. The last models were announced in October, so okay. it's usually about a year.
All right.
There are rumors about a September 10th announcement, but they're all saying that's going to be iPhone, not iPad.
Okay. Right.
Although they may tease.
Because there's the new OS coming.
Right.
So it makes sense that they're going to have the new hardware and the new software at the same time.
Within a month and
yeah.
a half, anyway.
Is it ready to ship now? So they may announce it in September, but in, say, shipping in October or November,
right.
something like
right.
that.
Right.
Which is really
so
annoying.
So in time for Christmas, certainly.
Yeah.
Great. Okay. All right, guys. Thanks so much.
Thank you.
It's always annoying when they say, you know, they announce it now, but it's not available for 2 months, because then sales of the current stock die.
Yeah.
But,
well, yes, and that's a problem. But the reality is that a lot of us want to know that because, for example, if I'm buying Christmas presents for people,
yep.
then I want to be able to say, oh, you know, if I wait until November to buy this.
November? I wait until the 20th. It's December 24th, it's a, right? On the way home from work.
It's not December, and the date doesn't have two digits. I'm not shopping.
There's Christmas decorations in the stores already. They skipped Thanksgiving and Halloween.
I am not shopping in any store that has Christmas decorations until after Thanksgiving.
Yep.
That's my boycott. All right. We are going to take a slightly longer hiatus for just a few minutes. I personally need to recharge my battery and fill up my water bottle. I don't know what these guys intend to do for the next 4 or 5 minutes, but that's what I'm going to do, and we'll be back on the other side of that with a whole lot more of what I continue to refer to because, well, it's true, the longest-running computer show in the known universe. With Dave Enright, Steve Ray, me, Nick Francesco, and you, this is Soundbites, right here on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Soundbites on member-supported Jazz 90.1. Get online now. Call 966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll free 800-790-0415. Or submit your question by email at soundbites.org. Once again, here's Nick Francesco, Dave Enright, and Steve Ray on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And at 4 minutes after the hour, we are Soundbites. And before we do anything else, Dave did remind me this is our anniversary show.
Yeah.
The Saturday of Labor Day weekend is 24 years ago.
Yeah.
We started this show. We are old. We started with our dear friend Bob Smith, who has recently stepped down and retired. He's was in the paper, so I suppose.
Yeah, it's common knowledge. It's
common knowledge. He suffered a stroke. He's in long-term rehabilitative care. I saw him couple of weeks ago, and I just haven't had life has just gotten in the way.
Yeah,
I don't want to visit him in the evening because I know he's trying to sleep and regain his strength, and days have been a little nuts, but with the start of the college year back and everything else.
Mm-hmm.
But,
you're in full swing.
He's doing okay-ish. It's a long, slow road, but Bob, I've always had a very special place in my heart for Bob, as I know we all have.
Yes.
And we wish him the best. But it is our 24th year on the air, hurtling headlong.
Starting
into 24th. Our 24th year on the air. And
wait till next year. We can do a big party,
baby. We need to do a big party.
25 years?
25 years on the air.
So, and that's just that the Bob was on XXI for 25 years. I didn't realize he was that new at the station when he started with us.
Exactly. Whoa. He was only on the station
a year or two
years
before us.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. But
it just seems like a lifetime ago, though.
Yeah, it is. It's quite
over
a while.
Two decades.
It's a quarter of a century, my friend.
It was. Yeah. You're two. That's two careers ago for you. You were still at the Big Yellow Box then, weren't you?
When that was still around. Yeah. And we used to go to PC Cubed.
Yep, and Frog Computer
the
Society.
Frog Computer Society.
You know, a perfect name came up last night, and Paul Casarino.
Oh, yeah.
Yep.
And I got to tell him about how back in the day with the old library.
Shareware.
You bring in empty disk, and you tell him what programs he'd want. In the next month, he'd copy those off onto your disk from our library.
It was ironic. He was one of the people in the computer clubs that wasn't into computers during the day.
I went to his house one day because I was running the Frog Pond and he was running the PCQ bulletin board, and we were talking about the fact that the PCQ bulletin board was mostly files.
Mm-hmm.
People were downloading files all the time, and off the Frog Pond, people were mostly doing messaging.
Mm-hmm.
It was mostly talking to other people, and Jerry and Phil and those guys had always
running
said,
FidoNet sort of was the third alternative back then. I was big into FidoNet.
We were off of FidoNet,
yep.
And they said we were the two biggest users of FidoNet.
Yeah,
bandwidth.
Back in the dial-up modem days and passing messages back and forth.
Yep. and he said, you two guys are pretty much equal in the amount of. So how many messages was I passing to equal the file sizes that he was downloading? I went to his house and he had this giant tower with 16. No, it must have been 14 CD drives. They went all the way to P.
Yep.
And it was really kind of amazing.
Yep.
But those were the days. And now here we are. Everybody's downloading everything off the internet, sometimes legally. And instead of talking about, 64K of memory, now we're talking. The original Apple 2. Yep. Started out with 16K of RAM.
Yep, and I remember the 48K upgrade. Yeah,
right.
And the lowercase upgrade.
Right,
you had to add a card to get lowercase letters.
Yep, and then you could put in a 16K card to get a full, whopping 64K of memory.
But going back there for a second, I can remember though doing the downloads like you were saying.
Yep,
and be halfway before they did packet checking.
Yep,
downloads back then would take easily a half hour, if not more.
Yep.
And then you could have a hiccup on the phone line.
At the very last bit.
And it didn't do packet checking back then. And you had to start all over again.
The Kermit protocol?
I remember
that.
Yes. We were talking about that last week with the guy from Greenlight. The size of files we're downloading has increased so much. So back then you were downloading, 5 megs maybe, and that was an hour.
Yeah.
And now we're downloading 5 gigs, and that's a couple hours.
Yeah. Yeah. It's pretty interesting, and we just remember those days. I actually still have a mug from the Frog Computer Society. I have a mug, by the way, from MLS Online.
Yeah.
Really?
Dan Rossica's system online. I still have that mug. I look at it and I smile. Listen, we better get back to the phones because Dennis has been very patiently waiting all the way from Rochester, New York. How are you, Dennis?
Oh, it's a long way.
It's a horribly long way.
You guys were talking about the... Your other caller was talking about an iPad. I haven't paid a lot of attention to They're tablets, basically. Is that right?
Yeah. Basically, they're a tablet.
What size screen is an iPad, and what size screen is the Nexus 7?
The iPad comes in 8-inch models and 10-inch models. And then if you want to count, there's also the 4-inch iPod Touch, the pocket-sized version.
Oh, that would be too small.
Yeah.
Right.
And then the Nexus has 7 and 10, right?
Nexus is a 7-inch tablet.
Yeah.
Nexus 7 is a 7-inch tablet.
Yeah.
Is there anything else? I'm just trying to learn about these and figure out which one would be my choice.
There's 50 companies making Android tablets in every conceivable size and configuration and price point. I have a Lenovo 10-inch tablet. Work buys many of these. I don't want anybody thinking I actually own these.
You have to review them for your business.
Played with, right. I've used Lenovo 10-inch, which is very light and very nice and very fast. And one from Samsung, one from Motorola. The Motorola Zoom XOOM, which is much heavier but also a little faster.
Officially gave up on the Zoom.
Yeah, they did.
A couple of weeks ago.
But my point is, there's a million of them that are out there. And you're right, there's a Nexus 7 and a Nexus 10. So you have a 7-inch tablet and a 10-inch tablet.
Anything bigger than 10 inches, you sort of get into the laptop range.
Yeah.
There are rumors that there's a 13-inch iPad coming out. I can't see that.
That's too big.
That's just going to be ludicrous.
Does the iPad do anything special that, I want to buy an iPad because it does something special that the other tablets don't do?
The basic difference between them is that the iPad runs Apple's iOS and connects into Apple's ecosystem. So if you already have Apple devices and you've bought stuff from the Apple iTunes Store and the Apple App Stores, that makes it easiest. The other tablets all run Google's Android OS, and they tie into the Android marketplace and the Android ecosystem. So if you've bought stuff from the Google Play Store or the Google Music Store, that's sort of its niche. And then there's the Amazon tablets that are all tied into the Amazon store. So it's can be a tricky decision depending on where you get your content from.
Is Android an operating system?
Yes.
Yes, just like iOS is. iOS is the operating system that runs the iPad line. Android is from Google, and it's the operating system that runs the Android tablets.
And Amazon has yet another operating system?
No, they're using Android as well.
Oh, okay.
But they put their own front end on the top of it.
Right.
And it's hard to run native Android apps
right.
on the Amazon tablets.
Right.
And then the Barnes & Noble Nook was like that too.
Right.
Barnes & Noble had their own OS on top.
And one of the reasons I like my Nexus 7 is that Nexus, the word Nexus means it is pure Android. No additional add-ons by anybody. So every bit of the things that are designed for Android will run on the Nexus 7 or 10.
And then one of the nice things about the iPad is that you can get the Google apps for it. So you can get the Google Book app and the Google Music app. You can get the Android apps for it. You can, I'm sorry, not Android, Amazon apps. You can get the Nook apps. And so the iPad is a little more versatile in that way, in that you can buy stuff from any of the stores. Contrawise, Apple doesn't make apps available for Android. So buying music from the Apple Store is tricky to get onto your Google tablet.
So if I want to get apps, like, say, a small business app, because I have a small business, I'm, you know, one-person business, but I want to get business apps, I can get them regardless of what tablet I have. Somebody's going to
Have them. Yeah, if you get an Android tablet, you buy them from the Android Store. If you get an Apple tablet, you buy them from the Apple online app store.
Right, your best bet is to figure out what apps you want for your small business.
Okay.
Then find out what device they run on, then buy that device.
Yeah. It can be a little tricky, but we see this similar question in our store. Someone says they want Microsoft Word. You don't necessarily want Microsoft Word. You want a word processor. And there's dozens of word processors for all of the operating systems. Microsoft does make their Office 365 web subscription available on the tablets and the Android tablets.
Right.
But they don't make Microsoft Word for either tablets. They make it for their own tablet. So there's the Microsoft, not Slate. What is their? Is it Slate? What's their tablet? The Windows 8 tablets.
The RT.
RT, yeah, Windows RT tablet. So Microsoft has yet another OS tablet that's completely incompatible with everybody else's apps.
But you don't care.
Right, yeah, whatever tablet you buy, you get the apps for that operating system.
Right, you are if you're buying this for your business, find the apps that run your business, then buy the device that runs those apps, and then play around in that ecosystem for other stuff.
Okay, that's an excellent idea. Thank you very much. And your guy with the fiber optics last week, that was a very interesting show.
I'm glad you enjoyed it. I really did, too.
Thank you very much.
Thanks.
Bye.
Yeah, it's not quite like the car industry. You got dozens of companies making cars, but tires are generally universal. The gas is universal. But if you want, you know, engine parts or brake parts, it has to be specific for your model car. But fortunately, there's usually half a dozen companies making it for your model car.
Exactly.
Unless you got the Edsel. And then so if you get one of those weird model cars that that isn't as popular, you know, in 10, 20 years when you want to find parts for it, you know, then you end up on one of the restoration shows saying how cool my car is.
All right. Before we go back to the phones, I just want to tell the people in the Google Hangout that, yes, I was green for a while. Now I seem to not be. This tablet is older than this show, and this laptop is older than this show, and so I'm not entirely certain what it's going to do on any given moment. But back to the phones, our next caller is Jim from Greece, New York. Welcome, Jim. What's up?
Well, good afternoon, gentlemen. A number of months back, my laptop caught a rootkit virus, which ultimately ended up wiping out my hard drive, and I had to restore everything with the recovery disk. So I'm in the process of putting things back together, and two specific requests I have is, what would you recommend? Oh, I'm sorry, running Windows 7 Premium Home Edition, the 64-bit edition.
Mm-hmm.
So my question is, what firewall would you recommend that I install and run, Windows or an external vendors, and what antivirus software, specifically something that would try to help me prevent from catching a rootkit virus again?
Well, see, that's the thing. Virus is going to do that. That's mainly spyware and malware. So you need those also, along with an antivirus software. But
and some people like to have a suite that does everything, we generally don't like that because each individual program isn't necessarily the
one
the
can't
best.
Do it all. Yeah. One can't do it all. And about your root kit, I wish you'd let us know because usually it takes a little work. If you've listened to the show, you've heard us say before, if you take it, the hard drive out and isolate it, you can usually remove the root kit without doing, rebuilding the whole computer. But since you are putting, and starting fresh, one of the other programs I would greatly recommend is, I know Nick and I like Avast and AVG for antivirus, but one other good program to put on, and it'll help your performance of your machine, is Revo's Uninstaller. The Revo Uninstaller is a great program. Instead of using the Microsoft product to uninstall a program after you've installed it and don't want it on there, it actually cleans out the registry and keeps your registry running a lot slimmer and thus improving the performance of it.
For a firewall, I would honestly say that the Windows firewall is not bad now. By the time they hit Windows 7, it was doing a pretty decent job of it. There is another one called Zone Alarm, which we're going to have to take a break. Why don't you hang on the line, and when we come back, we'll talk a little more about your story. That's it. We're going to take a break. Back in just a couple of minutes. Dave Enright, Steve Ray, me, Nick Francesco, and you. It is 19 minutes after the hour. We are Sound Bites on the truly great and truly member-supported Jazz 90.1. Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And at 25 minutes after the hour, we are Sound Bites.
We've still got Jim.
Jim online.
We've still got Jim
and
on
we should,
the line.
We should mention Security Tango.
And exactly, we should mention the Security Tango. Jim, are you still there?
Yes, I am.
All right. One thing you should do, if you're just putting your machine back together, this should actually be fairly quick. You should dance the Security Tango at securitytango.com. What that will do is make sure your machine is clean and also recommend a number of products that you can add in. Malware bytes, AVG or Avast, firewall stuff.
Super anti-spyware.
Super anti-spyware.
Revo Uninstaller.
All of which are things that you should be running. So as long as you've got a brand new machine to begin with, that's a great thing to do right from the get-go. And well, that will add all those things in for you.
I will do that, and I pretty much had that on my machine before, but obviously I ultimately ended up picking this rootkit virus up from somewhere. But
yeah, the problem is it's a cat and mouse game. The bad guys write a new virus, and most of the time, because Norton and McAfee are the two big antivirus companies, they won't
and Trend Micro now,
they won't release a new virus or Trojan until Norton doesn't see it. And then it takes a couple of days for Symantec and McAfee to catch up and release updates.
It's a big game of leapfrog. Yeah. One's leaping over the other, and it's a cat. And this has been this way since viruses first started coming out on computers. Always us trying to stay one step ahead of the virus writers.
We used to say, stay off of the CD areas of the internet. But these days, a lot comes from ads.
Mm-hmm.
So, the big companies like, Facebook and Yahoo, there'll be an ad on the page, and four or five people down the line, a guy put a malicious code in the ad, and then suddenly it's being served by Facebook,
mm-hmm.
and it's out for a few hours before anybody notices. And enough people use the site in that time that, millions of people can be infected.
That's a great segue to my last part of my question. I was using AVG and keeping it updated weekly. Every time a new definition came out, I made sure I had it. Now, this was the free version, and they were forever offering up, if you upgrade to the paid version, you get these additional features, none of which at the time I thought was really beyond much of what they offered for free, but now I'm second-guessing myself. So now as I put or reinstall AVG, I will go to the paid version just to continue to support
them.
Good
for you. That's the reason to do it.
But beyond that, is there any other benefits?
Well, there's certain other features, as you said, which you didn't think were useful but might have been.
And a lot of the times, the biggest feature of the pay version is a phone number to call for help.
Right.
Okay, I will do that.
Well done, you. Love to hear that.
Thank you, gentlemen.
Thanks.
Bye-bye.
That's always the catch-22, is we love free software, but somebody's got to pay. The author's got to eat and support his family. And what we see a lot of times in the AV community is that they have free versions for home users, and the corporate versions are what pays the bills.
Right.
And it's nice for the home users, too, to be able to
support them. You know, I mean, you get some extra features, and it'll just make your life that much easier.
Yep.
You know, I mean, being able to do the automatic updates and everything else behind the scenes so you don't have to worry about it.
All right. So, will Los Angeles become the country's biggest city to boast free citywide Wi-Fi? Such a plan may be in the works based on recent discussions at a city hall meeting last week. Councilman Bob Blumenfield, who heads up the Committee on Technology and Innovation, wow, they have a Committee on Technology and Innovation, has asked the city's Information Technology Agency to research how to set up a program as a way to help more Angelenos connect with the digital economy. We live in a world where success is increasingly tied to access to information. Southern California Public Radio reported him saying at the end of July, providing universal access to the Internet is a natural and necessary extension of these efforts. But municipal Wi-Fi programs can be hard for cities to pull off. Penetrating so many buildings requires a serious investment in hardware and antennae. Also, free Wi-Fi can be surprisingly controversial, largely because telecommunications companies see it as a threat to their business and have lobbied against it for years. In 2007, the Los Angeles Times estimated that citywide Wi-Fi could cost more than $62 million to cover LA's 498 square miles. Currently, there's often very spotty free Wi-Fi in the city's libraries and at LAX airport. The city council is expected to revisit the issue again next month when technology agency comes back with its research. Should we have a free citywide Wi-Fi? Do we have a technology agency in our city council? I don't know. Give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll free, 1-800-790-0415.
The Frontier citywide Wi-Fi service often gets labeled as free because it is free for the first 5 minutes. Long enough for you to log into your Frontier account.
That's right.
So if you do a lot of business, mostly in downtown Rochester, and need to have access to Wi-Fi on the road, that's an option for you.
Yeah, there's so many places.
It's by about half a mile.
But you can hit so many other places that it's free. You know, coffee shops and library and every place else. There's enough places around town that you can go and sit and patronize other local businesses here.
Yep. But what they're saying is if you're walking on the street, you got nothing.
Yeah. Well, BFD.
Well in places like Los Angeles, people walk a lot.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
And they sit out a lot.
And that's a bigger use now for cell phones, so you have cellular access and don't need Wi-Fi.
But except if who's got unlimited access on their cellular anymore.
And big cities with tall towers block cell access quite a bit, too.
Mm-hmm. That's why you need the Loon Project to bring it back around to that. All right, back to the phones. Our next caller is Gerd from Victor, New York. Welcome, Gerd. What's up?
Well, welcome to you, too. I got two questions, and I'm going to hang up after I ask the question.
Sure.
Pros and cons of Chromebook, and they go from what, like, 200 up to 500?
Pretty much. Well, there's one for 1500, but we won't talk about that one right now.
Let's not. And the other one is, what's your view of Norton 360? And I'll hang up and listen on your radio show.
Okay, thanks, Gerd. Let's start with the pros and cons of the Chromebook. I own one, and I love it, but it depends on what you do with it. If you look at it carefully, you discover several things. I have the Samsung one, so it was $250. Good screen, good keyboard, very, very light. 8 hours, 7 hours of battery life. Terrific all the way around. However, It doesn't, for example, have a CD player, so Mary wouldn't like it. It doesn't have storage, so she couldn't put her videos and CDs on it. I don't care about that. Most of the music I love is already in my head. I can just hear it playing full stereophonic sound.
You can't stop it if you want to.
I can't stop it.
I've never been in a big need for music on a device because I hear it in my head. Once I've heard it, it's in my head and I can play it again. But what a Chromebook does not have is a lot of storage, a lot of speed. For example, I use mine for writing, taking notes in meetings, writing stuff up for myself, collaborating with other people. I do all that through Google Docs, which means I have to be someplace that has Wi-Fi. Because without Wi-Fi, the machine is not very useful, which goes back to what Dave was saying of going to coffee houses and blah, 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 blah. But unless I'm in San Francisco, I can't sit out on a park bench and do work.
Right.
But for all of that kind of stuff, if that's what you mostly do, a Chromebook is great. But if what you do is Adobe Connect, Photoshop, or one of those kinds of things, or you want to rip music, or you want to compose music, or you want to edit video, there are things online that will help you do that, but they're not all necessarily great.
Yeah, it's basically a Chrome browser for laptop.
Anything you would normally do in the browser, you can do on a Chromebook.
But that means that you can only do things that you do in a browser.
Right. That's exactly right. Yeah. If you absolutely must use Word, then you don't want a Chromebook. But if you can use Google Docs or iWorks in the iCloud,
Pages, yeah.
That stuff, then you can use a Chromebook. So those are the pros and cons of the Chromebook.
Well, and because they are so inexpensive, they often make a great second, third computer,
right?
Or even for younger kids, we're seeing a lot of parents are getting the 7-inch tablets are relatively inexpensive for the kids to do their homework, looking up websites and research with, and you can also play a lot of neat games on them too. But for the price, the screen is smaller than the Chromebook with 11 and 13-inch screens, so it's $250 and you get a pretty decent web browsing Chromebook, and you can play web games on it too. That's a nice little thing.
Yep. And I have not yet played with iWorks.
We're just thinking that the iCloud.com opened their private beta, so now it's a public beta. I think you had a story later on too that it's so overwhelming, popular, that Apple is kind of scaling it back a little bit.
Yeah.
So, Google Drive. I still think Google Docs is a much better name than Google Drive because it's your documents on Google Drive, and the Office 365, where you have Microsoft Office on the web. Apple is now doing the same thing with their iWork suite on the web through iCloud. So Pages, Keynote, and Numbers to do word processing, spreadsheet, and database. And from what we're seeing so far, it's much more sophisticated. And full word processing, right, where Google Docs is fine for text and lists.
So for me, for example, when I am writing code, I mostly do that on my desktop.
Gerd had another question also about that. Also doing banking and online
anything
bill paying.
You do through the browser, you can do through this thing. So if you do it through the browser, then yes, you can do it.
And check. If you want to be sure, check with Chrome browser. Download Chrome browser on your desktop, because some banks, fewer and fewer now, but some banks require Internet Explorer.
Right.
So if you download the Chrome browser, then
smart and getting off of that.
Right.
Though.
So figure it out. You're right. The easiest way to figure it out is to run the Chrome browser on your desktop or laptop, and everything you do through that you can do on a Chromebook. If you have to go outside of that to do something that you do regularly, then you can't. So when I'm editing audio or video, or usually writing code, I'm on my desktop. On the Chromebook, I could do everything else, including write code if I really wanted to, under certain circumstances.
Save it as a doc file and ship it off.
There are editors that let you work directly on the code in other places.
Oh.
So it depends on the site that I'm editing as to whether or not I can actually do it on the Chromebook. But just run Chrome on your desktop, and everything you can do through there, you can do on the Chromebook. Now, Norton 360.
Yeah, I like Norton 360. They've come a long ways. If you had asked me this, say, a year or so ago, I would have said, no, stay away from it. But they finally got smart.
It was one of those megalithic programs that could really slow down your
computer. Oh, it would bring it to its knees. But they got smart. They stepped back because everybody was bashing it and not liking it. So they rewrote the code right from the ground up, made it very slim. And when they came out with this, they made sure that people knew how much processing speed it was taking, because they created their own little meter to show folks, hey, no, we're not eating up a lot of bandwidth and everything else, and yes, we've cleaned up our act, and here's how it's doing. So Norton 360, I like that product. I still like my AVG and SwiftAntiSpyware.
But now, had that said, we go back to the fact that Norton is one of the three programs that the bad guys target before they'll even release
exactly
their code. So
and that just took me too. The earlier caller says he updated his AVG every week. You got to do it every day now. So sometimes more than once a day, because the bad guys are that fast.
Yep. All right, we are going to take a quick break. Back in just a couple of minutes. Dave Enright, Steve Ray, me, Nick Francesco, and you. It is 40 minutes after the hour. We are Soundbites, proudly and happily, right here on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Before you call into our show, please make note of the following rules. 1. Turn your radio down. 2. Turn your radio down lower. 3. Remember, nobody has invented a good-sounding speakerphone yet. Don't use them. 4. Make sure you have a point. It makes for a more interesting show. 5. Calling does not guarantee you'll get on the air. No whining. 6. If you do get on the air, please do not tell the host what you just told the screener. We don't care. And 7. Is that radio turned down yet? We hope this will make for a more enjoyable program, and we thank you for your time.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And at 45 minutes after the hour, we are Soundbites. And we have Mike from Caledonia on the line. What's up, Mike?
Hi, how you doing?
Good, you?
I'm running Ubuntu, and I've upgraded to 12.10 on my laptop, and I was running 12.04 on my desktop, and all of a sudden OpenOffice started freaking out. So I thought, well, I'll upgrade to 12.10 on the desktop as well. This way both computers have the same system, but it didn't help. I tried deleting OpenOffice and putting in Apache OpenOffice, same thing. I did a completely new install on the desktop. Still, it's freezing. It's the Unity toolbar that freezes in the computer. Any ideas?
By freaking out, you mean it freezes?
All the little icons on the side turn strange colors. If I have OpenOffice open, it just freezes, and everything on the screen, like the lettering above, file, edit, stuff like that, all turn strange colors. And then sometimes the computer itself freezes where I have to restart the computer.
Right. Have you been using... which version now? Are you using OpenOffice or Apache OpenOffice or LibreOffice or which?
Right now I have the Libre OpenOffice, which comes with the Ubuntu 12.04.
Right.
I did delete that, though, and put in the Apache, but it did the same thing.
Yeah, I'm thinking it's not LibreOffice. I'm thinking it's got something to do with your video driver.
That's what I was wondering. It's a NVIDIA card, and it is using the GeForce. So let me see, I have it written down here somewhere. C61, G4, 7025, N4, 630A. That's the driver, the card. And then I tried different drivers that came with the boot new. First,
right.
I had the NVIDIA driver in the post-release updates, the one that they recommended, and that didn't work. Then I went to the one that came with the boot new, and that didn't work. Every one I go to seems not to work.
Right. I will tell you that I kind of have a similar problem. I also have an NVIDIA card. And every once in a while, and it's once a week, once every other week, the system kind of just spontaneously reboots. If I run Flash, if I don't run anything with Flash, in fact, by turning off Flash in my browser, it'll go for weeks.
Everything runs better on any platform.
Well, that's true. But once I have run something in Flash, I will guarantee you within 24 hours my machine will reboot.
Wow.
What about downgrading to the previous patch of Ubuntu? Is there maybe it's a version compatibility issue that the OpenOffice guys haven't fixed yet?
No, can't. Well, because they're on 13 now.
Oh, okay.
So,
and I'm running it on another computer.
Yeah. Without NVIDIA.
Right, with the Broadcom card.
Right, and so I'm wondering if the problem is, in fact, the NVIDIA drivers and...
But it had worked up to a point, and I don't know what that point was, but all of a sudden it just started happening.
Yeah.
And I I tried just about everything to figure it out, and I'm lost.
That's kind of the irony. Everything works until it doesn't.
Yeah.
Yeah, right.
Oops.
And the problem seems to be strictly the 64-bit.
Yeah.
Because I have 32-bit.
Also, though.
Yeah, it works fine.
And it works fine.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Well, there's an option then. Just run the 32-bit.
Well, no, I mean, yeah, I'd have to downgrade the whole operating system to 32-bit.
Yeah.
That you want 64.
Especially if it's card itself. Has got a flaw in it now. You know, it's going bad. It's a little older.
Is the problem with mine as well. But there is a... I have seen lots and lots of problems with this.
Anything out there on the FAQs on this?
Yeah, that's what I'm looking at.
Yeah.
Steve can... There's a specifically a post on getting NVIDIA drivers to work on Ubuntu 12.10.
Mm-hmm.
So Steve will post that and see if that helps. And if you do a kernel upgrade, you have to redo it. And make sure you, although the headers say obviously 17-generic, we're currently up to 25 or 31, I think it is. Mm-hmm. Generic, so make sure you've got the latest version of everything.
Right, right.
But it seems to be an ongoing problem with Ubuntu and NVIDIA, and I'm not sure.
There's a lot of links from a lot of different sites. The one you have was from Podzmensky. There's another one from Ask Ubuntu.
Yep.
And
I was looking through until I lost my internet the other day. My Frontier internet went down. It's taken them forever to fix it, but... That's why I figured I'd call you guys, because I have no access to internet and I can't do anything to get it to work now.
You got a friend?
Yeah.
Go to their house.
Yeah. This is a laptop, right?
Yes.
Go sit in a coffee shop somewhere.
Yep.
That's an idea, yeah.
Buy some coffee.
My wife works for RIT and I was going to go with her and just...
String an Ethernet cable from your neighbor's house.
Yeah, right.
He might be out also.
But that's pretty much the way you're going to have to do it. You're just going to have to get someplace that has access.
Okay.
And certainly RIT has pretty fast access.
Yeah, yeah. Do you know anybody that works on computers that have Ubuntu as a OS?
I don't.
Because I have a local guy in Henrietta, but he came right out and said, I really don't know, you know, Linux at all.
Check with the Lugor group, maybe even on their website, lugor.org. That's the Linux users group of Rochester. They may have referral pages for people that service Linux computers.
L-U-G-E-R?
O-R.
O-R. Okay. All right.
Lou Gore.
Lou Gore. Lou Gore. Yeah, Linux Users Group of Rochester. Yeah.
Oh, okay, yeah. All right, that's something to try anyway.
Yeah, and a lot of times the users group people, even you know, Mac, Windows, and Linux, they like to fix the problems themselves. And and many of us that own shops and do service work go to the meetings, too.
Oh, really? Okay. All right, well, I will give them a try anyway and see as soon as I get my internet back, or go out to RIT and try to get some internet.
Yeah, unfortunately, I'm also having trouble with it. I don't know what the story is.
Now, are you running 1210 or?
On one of my on my laptop, I am. At work, I'm running 1304, I guess it is.
All right.
And I have a similar problem. If I don't run Flash, it runs for months. If I run Flash within 24 hours, it's going to reboot.
That's interesting. I could try shutting Flash off and see.
Yeah, it's the only thing I can suggest.
Yeah.
Give it a try.
All right, well, thanks for your help.
All right, thank you.
Thank you.
Shutting Flash off tends to be a common fix for many things.
Yeah, for a lot of things. I just don't use it anymore.
Well, ironically, on my computer now, Flash is doing the Ustream video streaming, so it's sucking my processor down. When I had Pages on the web open, it was a fight between WebKit and Flash as to who was going to suck all of my processor down. So doing sophisticated word processing in a web browser takes a lot of processing power.
Yeah, it does. Yeah, it does. But, you know, I don't have a problem with HTML type stuff like that. That doesn't bog it down. Running iWorks in my browser doesn't bog it down, doesn't cause a problem. If I run WebM video, that doesn't have a problem.
None
of that is a problem.
Flash is a 20-year-old technology Flash. That hasn't really... It's got probably so much legacy code in it that it hasn't kept up with the times. Which is interesting, because 20 years ago, there was very little RAM and very little processing power. And so programs were often really optimized. But then we got lazy as the processors and RAM started getting faster and bigger. In fact, it was a Bill Gates famous quote about that, too. That, you know, why bother optimizing your code? Because the processors are so much faster anyway.
Yep, yep. And he's wrong, because now we're running 15 things at once. All right, listen, we're done for another week. As we hurtle headlong into our 25th year, with this show, we are very... What? We have our 24th anniversary, which means we're starting our 25th year.
He does that every year.
Every year he gets that.
Hey, at least I'm consistent.
Yeah. You are that. So we want to thank you all for listening. For Dave Enright, Steve Ray, I'm Nick Francesco. Michael and George are coming in. George is going to do the best German music you'll ever hear. We'll see you next week on Soundbites on member-supported Jazz 90.1.